Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I am Justin Mason, lead fantasy analyst and something else.
Writer,
that's what it is, at friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode are Mike and Matt. Mike, how you doing?
I guess better than you at this point.
I'm still a little jet lag. I'm dealing with sunburn. I've had a total of 3 hours sleep in increments today. I took like a 45-minute nap, then an hour nap, and then like a 30-minute nap. You know, it's been a rough one, but I'm super glad to be back on the airways after, you know, time away and being on vacation. And I'm glad to be talking to you, Mike.
You know what I'm glad about? I'm glad gambling is the U.S. What is it? The Supreme Court, I think, that voted that in. I've never wanted to kiss those road men so much in my life.
It really doesn't change much for me because I was already doing it. Now it's legal.
Now you can go to I bet they'll have an option for you to gamble anywhere, like at McDonald's. You can just go in and put down some type of parlay.
I'm hoping they'll have an option over at the Indian Casino. 20 minutes from my house. So that will be pretty sweet. Matt, how you doing?
I'm good, man. Psyched to see you back from vacation and found time in your busy schedule for us over here at FWFB. No, I'm just kidding with you, man. It's been a while since I've been on. We got Mike, too, and me at the same time. I don't know what the odds of that. I probably would have lost money on that bet, having all three of us on here. And we got a guest, too, so it's going to be a good show.
We do have a guest. It is a great guest, a newer guy in the industry. You may not have heard his voice yet, but you can hear him over and read his stuff over at pitcherslist.com. It is Alex Fast. Alex, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. It is truly an honor. A lot of people don't even let me be guests in their home, so it's very nice to be a guest on a podcast.
Well, I definitely would not let the majority of the people on this podcast be guests in my home, but...
What? Excuse me?
Whoa.
I fit right in then.
Yeah, so, but you are definitely welcome anytime on the podcast.
I've heard of it.
Before we get rolling into kind of our discussions for the night, why don't you let people know where you can reach on social media and then kind of plug all your work and talk about what you do over at pitcherslist.com.
Yeah, sure. So, I as you said, I work for pitcherlist.com. We're doing a bunch of great stuff right now. We do a daily podcast. I do a podcast every Tuesday with Nick called On the Corner. You can find me on Twitter at AlexFast8. I think that's my Twitter handle. I'm still new to this newfangled Twitter. I don't really know how it works. Yeah, it's AlexFast8. And we had a pretty cool debut today. We got this idea from the Effectively Wild podcast. We're doing an MLB debuts article where every day we write a blurb about the player that debuted the day before. So we started with that article today, and we wrote about Freddie Peralta and I think David Hess from the Orioles. And then what was his name? Like Brandon Mann, the guy from the Rangers who was in the minors for 17 years, right?
Guy.
Yeah. So we did that, and we're really excited about that. But yeah, so that's where you can find me.
All right, Matt, where can you reach on social media?
MD Tomp FWFB, and I might be the worst Twitter account in America.
You were easily the worst Twitter account at FWFB, which now includes 27 writers and podcasters. So you were quickly moving down that list.
Somebody's got to be last. So.
Well, I'm almost last in the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational, so I'm right there.
So what are you going to do for that? If you finish last in the amongst all of us in FWFB, how are you getting punished?
Obviously, we won't be doing it again next year because that's just embarrassing as fuck.
But, right, there you go.
Mike, where can you be reached on social media?
At my corner, FWFB. Yep, I don't have any quick tidbits to add to that.
Well, that's good. And you can reach me on social media at Justin Mason, FWFB. You can also follow Friends of Fantasy Benefits on Twitter at Fantasy Benefits. We have a Facebook discussion group you can join. And then also you can like Friends of Fantasy Benefits or even Justin Mason on Facebook as well. So, yeah. Or just friend me on Facebook because I talk to people and answer questions there as well. So that's enough plugs. We'll get to more plugs at the end of the show. Let's jump in and talk about our first player of the evening, and it's been too long. We haven't been on in a while, or at least the three of us together, or even, you know, just two of us together. And so I wanted to start kind of with a little bit of home cooking for myself. Alan Hansen has been getting quite a bit of playing time with the Giants, with Joe Panic down. He's currently hitting .298, .346, .638. He has four home runs and three stolen bases. Alex, I'll start with you. What are your thoughts on Alan Hansen? Is he fantasy relevant?
He would be if he didn't just get placed on the DL.
That stinks.
Yeah, he literally it. 4 hours ago. 4 hours ago was just placed. You heard it here first. He was just placed on the DL with his left hamstring. I thought maybe he was going to be able to play through it, but unfortunately, he wasn't. I mean, if he was healthy, I was definitely interested in him. I think he was going to be there. I know he was a strong side platoon, but I don't really understand why, because he was getting platooned with Kelby Tomlinson, who was hitting .214 against lefties and .231 on the year. So I was a little confused by that. And also, Hansen was hitting .250 off lefties, so roster resource still seemed to think that he was going to be getting platooned. I mean, his peripherals seem to support what he's been doing. He's got a 40% hard contact, which is more than some schlub named Gary Sanchez and Xander Bogaerts and Trey Turner. And his other xStats support it, too. He's got a 15% high drive percentage. He's got an 8% value hits, which are both, you know, way above league average. I personally think that that batting average is probably going to regress a little bit and start looking more like a 270, but even that, it's like a very far cry from the 221 he put up last year with the Pirates and the White Sox. He's been more patient at the plate. He's cut down at his K percentage, his swinging strike percentage, his O swing, and his swing percentage. They're all down. What I don't understand, though, is that pitchers are like still leaving a lot of balls over the plate to him. They're not throwing him a lot of breaking stuff, which doesn't really make sense to me. But yeah, if he was healthy, I would be interested.
All right, Mike, I know he's on the DL now, and that's my bad for not catching that mistake on my own, but whatever. Maybe you have a league in which he is DL worthy, NL only, 15 team mixed, and you don't have any other injuries. Is this a guy worth keeping on your roster, Mike?
I mean, it depends on the roster crunch. If you have available space in a deeper format, I'm fine with keeping him on. He's always been somebody I've liked in the prospect realm, and he's just never received consistent playing time. So naturally, he had a contact problem last year with the Pirates, but that, again, was inconsistent playing time. And throughout the minor leagues, he's always been somebody that has been able to have a high degree of speed and stolen bases because he's been able to get on base, and, you know, not because of walks, but because he's able to make contact. And now we're finally seeing him kind of get back to the mark that he was putting up in the minor leagues in terms of contact rate. And I mean, the power, you know, four home runs in his limited sample right now, like, that's not something that's going to stick necessarily. But, you know, 15 home runs, if he was to play a full season with like 25 stolen bases, I think is certainly within reason. And I think that hopefully he comes back pretty soon, because then you'll be able to use him. But if you're in a, you know, roster crunch where you're trying to keep somebody like Robbie Ray or Kershaw or whatever, and like you can't drop him, or you'd have to drop him, then that's unfortunate. But I do think whenever he comes back, he's going to be fantasy viable based on the playing time. I think he's just the type of guy that he's consistent at bats to be able to deliver. And, you know, if they end up platooning him, which could happen in the as far as the end result, then you probably will have to drop him at some point.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Hansen?
Hansen's always been kind of intriguing. Obviously, I focus a little bit more on the prospect side of things. And this is a guy that was a top 100 prospect for Baseball America twice, MLB Pipeline three times. I mean, he had speed. He was a shortstop with the Pirates coming up. And to put it simple, he just hasn't hit in his brief major league time until now. And it's not that far-fetched to say this could be finally when he's put it together. I mean, he's still only 25 years old. So he's got game-changing speed, and I think what Mike said with the 15 and 25, I think that's entirely reasonable, because he's looking at a guy who's got the prospect pedigree, he's got the skills behind it. The Giants tend to fare well, you know, developing middle infielders. They always, you know, they do a very nice job on that aspect of it. But 205 career stolen bases in the minor leagues, that's intriguing enough as it is right there. I'm looking at shorthanded here, but you're looking seven seasons off the top of my head of 20 stolen bases or more in the minor leagues. So he should be, you know, a good spark plug for the Giants. And You know, he was with the rebuilding White Sox last year, and they started playing him a little bit in the outfield, trying to, you know, get as much utility out of him as possible. But I think if you could just leave him at second base like the Giants seem to be doing, and let him do it, let him play there, you might have something here. The walk rates and the strikeout rates are pretty nice. And like I said, he's got speed, hitting for some power. It's an intriguing option. It's a shame he went on the DL now, because he'd be a nice guy to fill in for, you know, a lot of teams missing Daniel Murphy's of the world and guys like that. He's more than adequate fill-in.
Well, and I think with Joe Panik on the DL, once Hanson comes back, you know, I mean, he obviously can slot really easily back into that spot. And even when Panik comes back, like you said, he has worked in the outfield before. It's not like the Giants have much in left field holding him on the bench. So if he can continue to hit, and I think there are some really kind of intriguing things about his profile. One, does not strike out very much, only 15% strikeout rate this season. He has a remarkably low BABIP for a guy as fast as he is, and as how hard he's hitting the ball. And so I almost wonder if there's a, you know, while the average may regress a little bit, and some of the projection systems out there have him regressing to around like a 250 mark, I almost wonder if the BABIP would progress a little bit and maybe even things out, and he's a guy who could probably hit 280 rest of the way instead of 250 like a lot of the projection systems have out there. I liked what I've seen from him. He has real power. Like, two of those four home runs were not cheapies. One was, I want to say it was right center in San Francisco, which is not, like, that's not, it's the farthest right center in any major league ballpark. So, I mean, it's not, like, an easy place to hit a home run. And the other, his latest one was in Pittsburgh. Again, not a cheap place to hit a home run. So, you know, the power is legitimate. I think he's a guy who could, depending on when he comes back off the DL, and if he gets dropped by someone in your league, maybe he's a guy you kind of keep an eye on. You know, like Alex said, there was a chance that he could potentially play through this injury. So maybe it's a minimum stay type thing, and you can grab him in the next week, you know, a couple days before he's supposed to be activated, and you have a nice little cheap middle infield option.
Do you have any feeling about Austin Slater?
I
think that's who they called up for him, right?
I think he is like the perfect Giants prospect. He is a very low ceiling, high floor kind of guy that doesn't have a standout tool, that really isn't super interesting for fantasy. But he's like one of those really nice, like, professional hitters.
Like, he's an ideal platoon bat.
Yeah,
he crushes lefties. Not crushes, but he hits for a high average against lefties. He's an intriguing profile. He could run with some playing time out there.
He's a nice little NL only
magic
guy.
Team. Yes.
But I would prefer personally, I'd prefer they, you know, send Slater back down when Hanson's up and give Hanson a chance to see what he's got. Because, like you guys, I think have all mentioned, I mean, this is a former top prospect with a little bit of pedigree. Like, you know, this is a guy that, you know, has some talent, and really could be emerging into, you know, his own at age 25. Let's move on and talk about another guy who's kind of popped up out of nowhere this season. The last start wasn't necessarily pretty, but it wasn't bad either. And Caleb Smith has put up pretty nice numbers in Miami. 3.63 ERA, over 12 strikeouts per nine. Keeping the ball in the yard in that spacious ballpark in Miami. So, Alex, what are your thoughts on Caleb Smith?
Yeah, you know, Nick and I talked about him a little bit last week on the Corner podcast, and about how he kind of lives and dies by his fastball command, and how it was really encouraging that in his last three starts before that Braves start, he really seemed to figure out his command issues. I actually got into a weird Twitter conversation with Tristan Cockcroft about Caleb Smith. I love reading Tristan Cockcroft's stuff, but he wrote this really weird article where he essentially said that he didn't really buy what Caleb Smith was doing. And so I tweeted him. I said, okay, well, what peripherals do you think are supporting that argument? And he, to his credit, was like, to be honest, there aren't many. It's more of an eye test thing, which I thought was like a little bit frustrating. He was talking about that, saying that maybe his swing strike percentage isn't sky high or isn't as high as his K percentage, and that his walk percentage and fly ball percentage scare him. And like I said, Cockcroft said he needed some more evidence. But I think I'm actually a little bit more sold on Smith than he is. And you're right, that last start against the Braves was not great, but I was actually encouraged by it because we're talking about a guy who has command issues, who's facing the team with the best OBP in baseball, and a top five team when it comes to strikeouts. I mean, they aren't striking out much this year. So when I saw that he only had 8 whiffs against the Braves, I was like, whatever, that's fine. The Braves don't really strike out. Also, when I was looking into which team strikes out the least in baseball, I was very surprised to find out which team that was. Which team do you guys think strikes out the least in baseball overall right now?
The least, the Angels? No, they strike out a good amount, I bet. Mm-hmm.
Phillies?
I think Justin Upton puts them in the top 5 no matter
what. That was the first name I thought of. I was like, oh, no.
Albert Pujols. Phillies is a solid guess? There too.
It's not the Phillies, no. Anyone else? Last
Brewers?
Guess?
No, not the Brewers.
This is the team that strikes out the least, yeah. No, it is the Royals.
What?
Yeah, the Royals have struck out the least. Yeah, and it was last year, too. Last year, they were, I think, 29th or 30th. But anyway, as I was saying, I was kind of encouraged by the fact that he only had 2 walks against the Braves. And most importantly, his fastball command wasn't that bad. He still has a 3.56 Sierra and a 3.22 FIP. His StatCast FIP and his KW FIP are well below league average. He's got fewer line drives. He's got more ground balls. Like, I don't see, if I live and die by these statistics and these peripherals, I don't see what I can point to that says what he's doing isn't at least a little bit for real. So I still think that his, you know, Nick has him, I think, like 48th on the list. And I think that's, you know, that's like his ceiling. He could be like a
48th is a pretty decent spot.
Yeah, that's a little high for me.
Yeah, I think he can be like at most a top 50 pitcher at his ceiling.
Matt, what do you think?
His command keeps sticking up.
I like Caleb Smith a little bit, but not like that. He was kind of given away for. I mean, the Yankees still kind of regarded him in a decently high. I mean, he was given away in their ill-fated pursuit of Ohtani that gave him and Garrett Cooper over to the Marlins for some slot money and a minor league starter, Michael King, who actually looks pretty decent. Caleb Smith is also a Rule 5 pick from the Cubs, and he didn't make the roster, and they gave him back to the Yankees. So, I mean, he's had an interesting route to get to where we are. But like you said, the low 90s fastball, slider, and a changeup. He's in the Harlan Garcia bucket to me of a guy that's probably on a good team. He's not getting this shot in the rotation. He's fortunate to land in Miami, where they're going to allow him to start. And I just don't like how the fly ball tendency that he has. Only getting ground balls at a 31% clip, but I guess he's in the perfect ballpark for it. And he's got, you know, Lewis Brinson and Cameron Maben running balls down in the outfield. So those two good guys to have if you're a super fly ball guy. I don't think the K's stand up. I mean, you got to remember too. I mean, this is a guy you're looking. Quick math here. It looks like his career high in innings is 130. So he's not gonna be able to go much past 160, I would say. But, I mean, that's down the road thoughts. And if Caleb Smith's getting 160 innings and the Marlins are, you know, in their own situation. But he's just a guy for me. He's a guy that's riding a hot wave. He caught the Cubs at the right time when they weren't hitting the ball. And he's right in line with his peripherals. But I think this is a decent guy to – enjoy it while you can. This next, even if you want to cut him after this last bad start here, I wouldn't hesitate just because there's not much here, and just by watching him, he doesn't impress. He doesn't really pass the eye test. I know that's lazy analysis, but he just doesn't offer anything that looks exciting. And he's one of those guys that just kind of gets by.
Mike, what do you?
It's funny because that's the Cockcroft route. That's the same thing that Tristan was saying, which I just think is interesting.
Mike, what are your thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, it's really hard because I'm sitting here digging, looking at his underlying metrics, like why is this stuff happening? And I've seen one start of his this year, so I'm not going to sit here and give the whole eye test argument because I'm not going to base it off of one start. But I will say this, his stuff isn't great from what I saw. And when you look at it on like Brooks Baseball, for instance, his swing strike rate on all of his pitches have descended, you know, as the couple of months have went on. The slider did make an uptick in April, but like I just don't. To me, when I watch the start and then when I look at his actual pitches and the movement and everything, I don't see a ton here. And, you know, based on a 13% swing strike rate, that's there's no way that that continues for me. As far as like where he'll rank as a pitcher, like right now he's top 55 in the starting pitcher ranks on the ESPN Player Rater. I think that if that's his ceiling, then you know what we'll probably see as the season goes on from now forward is probably that of like a top 75 starter. Somewhere in there. Right now his expected ERA on HQ is 3.7. And that's, you know, again, with pretty good, you know, not giving up a ton of home runs. I will say, like, he got Colorado in Miami, and Colorado is really bad on the road this year, even more so than usual. He hasn't faced the Washington Nationals yet. He's faced everybody in division once, except for the Nationals. He's going to face those teams again. And I just don't think that his stuff is good enough to really fool teams again. So with that said, I don't think that there's a lot here. I do like that he throws 93 from the left-hand side. I do like that he's held righties in check thus far, but there's no way he keeps a 162 average against righties either. To me, there's a lot that's going to start regressing negatively for him as the season goes on. And I don't really want to be on that train as it's going down. So
I think, I want to kind of agree with everybody all at the same time, which is interesting, because we have a little bit of divergent thinking. I think, like Alex mentioned at the top, when the fastball command is good, he's going to be good. I like the slider. The slider looks to have taken a little bit of a step forward this year. And that ballpark really just covers a lot of the warts. You know, the fly ball rate, the walk rate. You know, being able to keep the ball in the yard is a huge deal for a guy like Caleb Smith. That being said, he's not going to get to do or play all of his starts on or at home. You know, he will face different competition at times. So for me, he's either a streamer or he's a guy that if I can afford to only start him at home, that's where I'm starting him. I don't think I would trust him necessarily on the road, especially in some poor ballparks. You know, when they travel to Atlanta, you know, he's kind of a must sit for me. If they travel, you know, you look at his, you know, two of his worst starts or three of his worst starts of the year were at New York, at Philadelphia, at Milwaukee. So I'm probably going to just use him at home and hope that I can ride the hot streak. And if he seems like he's starting to fall apart, if the fastball command is eluding him maybe two or three starts in a row, that's, I think, the signal to drop him.
Yeah, it's funny you say that about his slider, too, because the slider's got a 4.2 PVAL right now with a 17.3% mm-hmm. swinging strike rate. So, mm-hmm. I definitely agree with what the other guys are saying, too. I think this is the ceiling that we're seeing from him right now. I don't think it's going to get much better than this. And I have no problem if owners who have him want to try and sell him, because this is probably going to be the peak value. But I think he's just one of those guys where if we're watching a game and we see that his command and his fastball is lacking, then he's not going to do well. And you'll be able to see how well he does in Atlanta very soon, because that's his next start, actually, on Saturday, I think it is.
That'd be interesting, too, because he just faced Atlanta. He just faced them, too. Exactly. He's the kind of guy that doesn't have much exposure, so that'll be big.
Well, and it'll be the first time this season a team point. Has seen him twice, so... you know, that's always a big test for a team to finally get to see you a second time. So let's move on and talk about Matt Adams. And when we talk about Matt's, we always throw it to Matt Thompson first. So, Matt, what are your thoughts on Matt Adams, who is started off the year really nicely? 10 home runs already, 274, 389, 642. Ryan Zimmerman on the DL. Is he a must pickup?
He's a must pickup for sure. Me being a Cardinals fan, this is the guy that everyone always thought he could be, except for me. I didn't think he had 30 home run pop in the bat. I just watching him hit, he was more of a hit tool over power for his baseman. But it seems to have flipped the script a little bit this year. I don't know if he's sewing into the launch angle stuff or not. I mean, he always hit a decent amount of ground balls for someone of his size and speed, and you know, obviously everyone knows he got in better shape and lost some weight. The Nationals are even more willing to use him in left field a little more than the Cardinals were, which is interesting to get his bat in the lineup, I suppose. But that you can't play him out there long term. So I guess it comes down to the fact that when Zimmerman comes back, he's going to go to the bench, right? I mean, he kind of has to. Zimmerman's like the franchise icon there, for better or for worse.
And what? No, I mean, he's not the franchise
icon.
He was like their first ever.
I think their franchise
pick.
Icon is actually losing in the playoffs, right?
Well, that's exactly what it is. First round exit.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I think that's the franchise icon. Yeah.
How many more play attempts are you going to get at Zimmerman this year? For real? Like, what, 200 maybe? Like,
right, but you can't play Adams in left field. I've seen that firsthand. You can't do it. And I'm not sold on Adams completely. I think the power is a complete mirage. Obviously, with the 642 slug, it is. But, I mean, last year in a part-time role with Atlanta, he was hitting for them down the stretch last year with St. Louis and Atlanta moved Freeman to third base. And he slugged, 522 to Adams. And I think that's more than the real guy.
He hit 20 home runs in 367 right. plate appearances. I mean, the power's legit.
Yeah, it's just not 30 many, home run power, though, like it is now. That's not.
Why not? I mean, like, I think it has been for a little while. He had 16 home runs in 327 plate appearances. You know, you give him 600 plate appearances, that's 30 home runs. He's had this power forever. It's just been a matter of getting the plate appearances because the defense is so bad and he's been blocked.
Rest of season, Matt Adams or Justin Bour?
Matt Adams.
Right. Really?
Okay. I like how you anticipated me saying Justin Bour. That was really sweet. It's you're almost like my wife who thinks she can read my mind but actually can't.
Yeah, well, I'm not buying it. I'm Mike, selling all my shares to Adams.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Bad Adams?
Was Adams with the Braves in June last year? Does anybody remember?
Yes.
Recall?
Yep. He was, yeah.
All right, so last year in June, he popped 10 home runs, and his walk rate in particular jumped up to about 10%, which right now his walk rate is sitting at about 14%. For the year, and that's really to me a big sign, because power hitters always are really good at pitch selection and are really good at walk rate as well. So Adams, I mean, just down the board, when you look at Statcast data, his exit velocity is up almost 2 miles an hour. His barrel percentage per not bad ball but per plate appearance is in the top 30 in all of baseball. It's at 15% right now, and barrel is my favorite Statcast metric that's out there. So essentially, to me, he is doing a better job of being selective at the plate, and the lineup itself will provide him that. Daniel Murphy, whenever he comes back, is going to be another kind of guy. I know you don't believe in lineup protection, Justin, but I believe that a really good lineup makes better pitches for people in the lineup, because pitchers are, trying to get somebody like Bryce Harper out, and then all of a sudden you got Matt Adams up, and you might give him, just slip up a little bit. So with Adams, I think that, to me, Ryan Zimmerman, we've seen this before with him. Like, this is not new. Last year was new because he was able to stay on the field for the most part. But this is, again, going to be a situation where Adams gets, to me, somewhere in the vicinity of, 350 to 400 at-bats at first base, which is going to equate to, 450 to, 500, 480 maybe in plate appearances. And I think he's going to hit 30 home runs. Like, based on the changes I've seen, I love it. There's an expected power index metric that Baseball HQ uses. Right now, he's about 40 points above that from last year. But at the same time, he put up something close to this in 2016, and it's really not that far of a cry for him to continue this, even for another month or two into this season. And, he could be, by the time we hit All-Star break, he could already be at 20 home runs. And then what are we really asking for in the second half? So you're asking me whether he's a pickup? Absolutely. If you're asking me whether he should stay on your team until something happens, absolutely. I'm trading for him if I can get him in a deeper format, not necessarily like a 10 teamer, but 15 team formats or anything. If somebody's trying to sell because they don't believe it, I'm willing to buy him, because I think that he can do something like this for the rest of the year.
All right, Alex, what are your thoughts on Matt Adams?
Yeah, I got to agree. I mean, he's top 25 in hard contact. I mean, he's top 40 in average exit velocity. Like you said, I mean, his 18.3 launch angle is higher than, Jose Ramirez and Mike Moustakas and Freddie Freeman. It's like top 40 right now. So he's still buying into that that revolution. What I'm kind of curious about when I was digging into him is why pitchers decide to throw him sinkers. Like, they throw him sinkers all the time, and he's hitting 444 off the pitch. And the year before, he was hitting 390, and the year before that, he was hitting 367. So I don't know why they continued to do that. I also think that when Zimmerman comes back, why wouldn't you? Who takes the job from him in left field? Because right now it's like Andrew Stevenson, right? He's the guy who's getting a lot of the reps in left field, right?
Yeah, Andrew Stevenson.
Yeah. So why? Looks like it right now.
Eaton's probably not coming back for a while either.
Theoretically,
Eaton's out to the middle of June.
Yeah, theoretically, so when Daniel Murphy comes back, they can move Kendrick out there. But
Victor Robles, when he's healthy, that's
when is Robles going to be healthy?
I find it difficult seeing why they would immediately supplant who's been their consistent cleanup batter.
Yeah.
In a team that like has been struggling offensively. I mean, they've been putting it together recently a little bit more, but I mean, if he's their best bat right now, I have a difficult time seeing why they would all of a sudden just relegate him to the bench
you think Zimmerman's going to sit after the season?
No, I mean, they could put him in left field and then put Zimmerman at first.
Right. I've seen Adams in left field before though, and it's highlight worthy. Remember when Tommy Pham liked the post by Fangraphs about Adams being left field?
That was funny. I didn't know that.
When Tommy Pham was in the minor leagues, he liked the post by Fangraphs saying that the Cardinals were pretty much foolish for putting Adams in left field. It was hilarious. But
don't get me wrong. Like, I agree with you, Matt, that like defensively he cannot play left field competently. But they're doing it. There's a difference between what we see as analysts and fans of the games and students of the game as, like, this shouldn't be happening, and then what major league teams actually do. So far this season, he's played 11 games in left field out of, 13 games at first base. Like, that's a 50-50 split virtually.
Right.
Sometimes it's, you know, how many times do we say, like, this guy X should be the closer, you know, and teams refuse to give him a shot because of whatever reasons. We can't always predict what a Major League Baseball franchise is going to do, and we definitely can't predict that it's going to be what's in the best interest of the club overall. We have to go by what we see is happening, and right now, the Nationals are willing to throw him out in left field, and so you got to think if they want to keep the best offensive lineup, and right now they're chasing the Braves. Like, this is a team, and they're still behind barely the Phillies. Like, this is a team that is going to lose Bryce Harper soon. They want to win a World Series this year. They're already down in the division. This was a division they were supposed to run away with, and they still may. But, this is a team that is going to do whatever it can to compete. And if they feel that Matt Adams' bat in the lineup gives them the best shot, they're going to throw him out in left field and go, screw the defense. You know, let's hope Michael Taylor can kind of make up for it a little bit.
Looking good, too, Matt Adams. He's looking even more svelte than the year before. Like, looking good. Good for him.
Good use of svelte.
I don't know.
All right, let's move over and talk about Miles Mikolas, and we talk about crappy Cardinals. We always throw it to Matt Thompson first. Matt, tell me about Miles Mikolas.
It's quite simple. The thing with Mikolas is he leads the major leagues in strike percentage thrown, and also gets ground balls at a 53.5% clip. So that pretty much solves it. Get ahead and get ground balls and get out of it. I mean, he's not striking out a lot of guys. He's getting, if you look at a lot of the peripherals, the left on base percentage and all that stuff, he's outperforming his, you know, FIP and XFIP, whether you like that set or not, by a run and a half a run, respectively. So I think there's definitely some regression coming. He doesn't miss a lot of bats. But I like the curveball. If it's a big, loopy, slow curveball, that gets a lot of swinging strikes. He just throws it about a quarter of the time. But it's just a real simple pro. It's watching him pitch is fun. It's like art. In and out, up and down, just constantly getting ahead. It's the blueprint for younger arms if you're trying to teach someone how to pitch, and he's a guy to watch. But I don't think it's going to last quite as well as it's going now. The minuscule walk rate is very nice, though. He does not walk anybody. He gives up home runs, but luckily there's nobody on base because he doesn't walk anybody. But it'll last, not like this, but he'll be a top 50 starter the rest of the way easily, just because the floor is so high and what you're looking at right now.
Alex, what are your thoughts on Miles Mikolas?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that, and I mean he leads the league in walk per nine right now. He's got a 0.58 walk per nine. That's crazy. And yeah, he's got that 1.16 home run per nine and the 17.6 home run to fly ball ratio, but all of that is inflated by his first start where he gave up three home runs. If you take out that first start, his home run per nine is 0.66 and his home run to fly ball is 11.1. I mean, this Miklós has a positive P-val on every single one of his pitches right now, except for his changeup, which he like barely even uses. He's got a 16.3% swinging strike rate in his slider. It's not like he gets a lot of whiffs. He doesn't. I mean, he's got a 6.75 K per nine, and the most whiffs he's recorded in a single game is 12, and he's like averaging like 9 or 10 a game. What's weird is like if you look at his location, if you look at his like his heat map right now, he's leaving a lot of pitches like up right now, which is so funny because he's eighth in the league in ground ball percentage, right? That 53.5% ground ball percent that you brought up is eighth in the league. So like that didn't make any sense to me, which means that batters seem to be getting on top of it, I guess, a lot. So that kind of scares me that they're going to start bringing the swing down a little bit and maybe that home run per nine might go up. That's what I think about him.
Mike, what are your thoughts?
He's a top 15 starter right now on ESPN, and I think he is going to end up being in the top 40, 45, somewhere in there. It's just, it's unsettling to me the things I love is the fact, like, stuff you guys have already mentioned. The first pitch strike rate for him is almost 70%. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you put that up on a leaderboard, I bet it's somewhere in the top 20, at least, probably top 10. But, and he's obviously not walking guys. The only problem I have with that is, you know, people are going to start to get the book on him, and they're going to just start swinging on the first pitch. And if he's leaving it up like that, like you guys are saying, then, you know, people are going to start clobbering it. Pitches in an all right home ballpark, but, you know, your Milwaukee's and Cincinnati's of the world are going to end up clobbering stuff if it's up there. And I think that he's going to be solid, though. I mean, at the end of the day, I think he's going to end up being a serviceable starting pitcher, like 4 or 5 for you in fantasy teams. And, you know, while he might not have the best strikeout rate, the stuff he's doing for you in WHIP is going to be great. So, I think we're going to be seeing worse times ahead for him, but at the same time, I think that he's going to be really, really serviceable, a lot more serviceable than I would have said. I think you and I, or all three of us, discussed him prior to the season starting, and I don't think any of us could have envisioned something like this happening. So, you know, bravo to him for at least having a good couple of months so far.
Yeah, he is one of those guys that, I don't necessarily get 100% how he continues to do what he's been doing. I think part of it is, like you mentioned, Mike, his first pitch strike percentage is third among qualified starters in all of baseball. So he's getting on top of hitters, and if you look at his splits through his through counts, you can just see, like, when he gets on top of hitters, he holds batters under a 200 batting average. And, you know, and depending on, you know, what the second pitch is, it can be under, you know, 100. So, I mean, that's pretty impressive stuff. I do worry that there is some regression coming. I think the fly ball rate has to come up. I mean, right now he's only giving up 23% fly balls. With how much he pitches up in the zone, I think that is just bound to change. Getting a fair amount of infield fly balls, which I think is definitely helping him. I don't know if I would necessarily say he's a top 40 starter for me. But it's with the amount of injuries we're seeing right now, and my Tout Wars team can attest to this. Yeah, with I think I've got nine or 10 guys total on my Tout Wars DL right now. You know, it's hard to not put him in the top 40 right now. Rest of the way, as guys start coming back from injuries, he'll probably bump out and just inside the top 50 for me. But I mean, for a guy you were probably getting outside the top 300. You've already made a pretty decent profit, and I wouldn't mind selling him because he's more of a kind of kitchen sink guy. He just throws a bunch of different pitches, and I think that helps keep batters off balance. And I worry that as teams start to see him a second time and a third time, that may start to kind of teams are going to start to figure him out a little bit. So we'll see kind of as things go. But I think right now is the selling point for Miles Mikolas.
And real quick, go ahead.
Go on.
No, go ahead. I was just going to I was just going to talk about another Cardinal pitcher since we were going to
talk
about Reyes. But go ahead with yours and I'll go back.
Is yours Jack Flaherty? Because if it is, I'll be very excited.
Flaherty is starting tomorrow, Tuesday.
Yes, so. I'm so high on him. Because
Flaherty should be up for the rest of the season with, you know, the Wainwright incident we had yesterday. I'll call it incident because he was.
Do you think Mike Matheny just went up to Adam Wainwright after the game was like, your elbow hurts. And Adam Wainwright was like, no, it doesn't. He goes, yes, it does. No, it doesn't. Yes, it hurts.
Yeah.
The thing that cracked me up, I shouldn't say it cracked me up, but the thing that frustrated me was listening to the post-game comments. It was like, oh, yeah, he said his elbow hurt before warm-ups, but we let him go anyway. What?
I think it's the other way around with Waino too, because this was the guy who was like, I'm starting the home opener. And they were like, I don't know, Jack Flaherty had a great, and he's like, nah, I'm starting the home opener. So I think it's the other way around, unfortunately.
Cardinals fans, we all knew like that Wainwright was just, he was gonna do this, like try to gut and guile his way through, you know, a start at the expense of the pitching depth that's better. And I keep saying glad because I'm not glad he's hurt, because, you know, Wainwright was one of the, you know, best pitchers in franchise history. But it's better in May than September. I'll just say that. And, you know, in Alex Reyes today, this is what I want to do. He had his second rehab start, but he's been building his arm strength up. He pitched two full starts in extended spring training, then went to Florida State League, and now he's in the Midwest League today. Five innings pitched, faced 18 hitters, threw 80 pitches already, so two more starts, he's ready to go. Gave up one hit, no runs, two walks, and struck out 12 batters.
Wow.
So that'll play. And a little inside info, his targeted return date for the major leagues is May 28th against the Brewers in Milwaukee, as Reyes should make that start.
Wow. That's cool.
So there you go. And Mike List will stay in the rotation. So it'll be Reyes, Martinez if he's back, Mike List, Flaherty, and Luke Weaver, and Waka. One of those two will kind of work their way out.
Huh. The only thing I was going to say is I was looking at that, not to derail us too further, and I'll keep it brief. I was looking at that first strike percentage. Right behind Mikolas, who, as you said, is tied for third, is someone who I haven't dug into too much, but he keeps popping up and I'm curious to dig into. That's Marco Gonzalez, who not only does he have the fourth best first pitch strike percentage right now, but he has the largest disparity between FIP and ERA in baseball, or at least that was maybe 5 or 6 days ago. So I don't know. I don't know if any of you guys have thoughts about him. I don't know what you guys think, but yeah, that's it's almost two full runs. That's crazy. This is a guy who had a 60 grade changeup too, who had a pretty decent spring training. So like, I don't know. I'm curious to look into him and see if maybe he's a great buy low candidate, or I don't even think he's a buy candidate. I think he's on the waiver wire for sure, and maybe he could be
Marco Gonzalez something. Or Caleb Smith.
Marco Gonzalez.
Yeah,
agreed. Yeah,
but I don't even really like Marco Gonzalez. I mean, he's a guy who gives up a little bit too much hard contact.
A lot of fly balls.
Yeah. I mean, he is really relying on secondary stuff. He's only throwing his fastball 39% of the time, and that's partially because it's not a...
Not very good.
Yeah,
it's low 90s. Former Cardinal prospect.
You know, and like, I think he's on the waiver wire for a reason. He's not walking guys, which is... you know, one of the keys to his success right now, but he doesn't have a huge track record of, you know, keeping guys off the base paths, getting a little lucky in the strand rate. I think this is a little bit more smoke and mirrors with Marco Gonzalez than anything else.
What do you mean his success? 5.3 ERA is not success. 1.51.
Well, I mean, like the FIP and XFIP. Like he's got a 309 XFIP right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, usually if you don't walk guys and you have a good strikeout rate, then, you know, and
but
you,
the strikeout rate isn't supported. Like,
no, it's not. That's going to go down. And but his BABIP is 400 against right now, although in 8 starts last year was pretty close to the same thing. So, you know, usually, historically at least, pitchers tend to regress down to a 300 BABIP. That's kind of like a universal baseline for starters. But, yeah, I mean, I like Gonzalez more than Smith, but I also agree with you.
Gonzalez is out of options too, so he has to stay up. That's one thing that's either for better or for worse, I suppose.
Well, if they're throwing Wade LeBlanc out there, then I don't think they have any problem throwing out Marco Gonzalez.
Hey, right. I'm using Wade LeBlanc in Tout Wars this week. That's like,
are you really?
Well, it's a head-to-head league. He's got a 2-start week, and
wow, it's gotten to that point.
The state
Justin,
of your
God.
Team right now.
I mean, it's just I lost Kershaw. Robbie Ray, Carlos Martinez. God, I can't remember. I mean, I'm just like, my team is bleeding And not only that, like, this is, like, I'm going to go off on a little bit of a rant here, and people who have listened to this podcast for a long time have heard this rant before. God, I hate head-to-head leagues. Like, second most points in the league, and I'm in eighth place.
It's just,
what?
Well, do you do you reward it all at the end of the year for most points?
No, it's tout wars. The only reward is winning the league. Like, you, like,
that sucks.
Like, it's just like no one cares. Like, you know, it's just, you know, just where you. The only reason I even like got some points off of in the standings last week is because Clayton Richard pitched a gem. I am starting Clayton Richard, people.
You're Wiley.
Jesus
Very
Christ.
All right. So you have Clayton Richard and Wade LaFleur on the same staff? That's pretty bad.
Yeah, no, it's really bad right now. I mean, I just my three fab pickups in pitching this week were Andrew Heaney, who's starting, I believe.
You just can't quit that guy. You can never quit him.
I didn't have much options, Mike. It's not like, you know, I mean, I put in a pretty decent bid on Sal Romano and lost. I mean,
you know who people put an apeshit amount of bids on in TGFBI were Fernando Romero and the kid that just came up and struck out 13 in Colorado.
Freddy Peralta.
Like those two. Those two went for a ton. And they're very good pickups, by the way.
Justin Heaney. Heaney's gone 4.1 innings pitched with 3 hits, 1 earned run, and 6 Ks, my friend.
You're damn right he has. What's Wade LeBlanc doing right now?
He's pulled a Dylan Bundy.
Is LeBlanc tonight?
Yeah, I believe so.
He went 6 innings pitched with no earned runs, 3 hits, and 4 Ks, and no walks.
I am a fantasy god.
You lucky bastard! You lucky bastard!
No joke. I mean, people remember the Tout Wars team I put together was what, like 90% pitching. Right now, my pitching staff is Max Scherzer, Jeff Samardzija, Dan Straley, Chris Stratton, Kyle Gibson, Brad Boxberger, Andrew Heaney, Wade LeBlanc, and Jeremy Jeffries. The last three I picked up this week. Because
you said you lost out on Sal Romano, right?
Yes.
2.1 innings pitched, 4 earned runs, 7 hits, 2 Ks, 2 walks.
Fantasy god.
Against your Giants.
Well, how's Stratton doing?
He's actually doing fine. 3 innings pitched, 1 earned run, 1 K, and 4 hits. He's holding his own.
Fantasy god.
Sounds about right.
All right, let's move on and talk about Gleyber Torres. Mike, you haven't had a chance to go first yet, so I'll let you talk about this one, or start off talking about this one. Torres has been great since being called up, hitting 319, 360, 493, 3 home runs, and a stolen base. Is this the beginning of a huge breakout for the rookie?
I don't think so. I think he's obviously going to get a ton of pub because he's on the Yankees and he's a really fine prospect. And I think for future years, he's going to be a really solid middle infielder. I love Torres long term. I have no issues there. But for especially shallow formats, I think he is not usable for right now. I don't think he's going to steal much. And the 3 home runs, 2 of them were walk-offs, if I'm not mistaken. I know at least one of them was. And I mean, maybe he has kind of a really good skill of, you know, being, I guess, a Showtime type guy wherever, you know, things are on the line and being able to, you know, perform and be clutch. But at the end of the day, for fantasy, like his hard contact is terrible. It's below league average. His StatCast metrics back it up. The only thing that he's really doing well, according to StatCast, is expected weighted on base average. It's at a 360, which is obviously pretty solid. But in terms of hard contact, he's not making much. The contact rate overall isn't great. And I think as, you know, times go on, you know, he's going to hit a rookie wall at some point. His BABIP is over 400 right now at the moment. And I think his batting average is probably going to settle in somewhere in the 260 to 270 range. He is making a good amount of line drive contact, but I just don't think that that's going to end up resulting in a lot of home runs. So I'd say for the rest of the year, I'm going to give him, you know, 12 home runs somewhere in that vicinity with a 260 average and, you know, a handful of stolen bases, maybe 7 or 8 at most. And that's just, to me, that's more of like a deep league play. And I think people are kind of referring to him as more of a mixed league ad right now. And I just don't buy it.
All right, Matt, you're a prospect guy. Tell Mike he's wrong.
I'm going to tell Mike he's 100% correct.
Yep, you hear that? Yep.
I think, Justin, you said the same on the sleeper of the bus pretty much and got roasted for it.
Yeah, I'm still getting roasted for it.
Yeah.
Really? About Kleiber?
He might be your new Dansby, since you need a new one. it's the thing with Kleiber is, he's a fine player. It just might not be this year. He's got really no plus fantasy tool for 2018. Eventually down the line, I think he's a 25 home run middle infielder, but that time is not now. The hit tool is going to be awesome as well. It's just not going to be right now. He's riding the hot wave. Obviously, with him hitting the ball the way he should, in any 15 team or more league, he needs to be owned. Any dynasty league, he's already owned. Guys like this who were a Cub prospect and then a Yankees prospect are always going to be slightly overhyped. I'm not saying Torres is overhyped. I mean, I had him as a top 20 prospect for me in the fantasy realm coming into the season, but I think a lot of guys had him in the top 10, which I don't understand. But I like Torres. He's a fine player, but not for 2018.
Breaking news. Obviously, Kelby Tomlinson was listening to Alex at the beginning of the podcast because he just singled home two more runs against Sal Romano. So.
There you go.
Alex, what are your thoughts?
You're welcome.
Yeah, exactly. What are your thoughts on Gleyber Torres?
Yeah, I mean, with Gleyber Torres, like, find me another guy who's striking out 24% of the time and has an over 300 batting average. Like, that's just kind of funny to me right now. I was looking at the other guys who have, like, a 25% or 24% K rate, and they're all hitting, you know, it's like Aaron Altherr and Derek Dietrich and Evan Longoria. Like, I don't know. I was talking, I think, with one of the guys at Pitchlist about this. Do you guys personally think that he's going to be a better – one of those guys who's a better real-life player than fantasy player?
100%. Yes.
Yeah,
I think there's more upside than that, but
I don't think he's going to be like a Dansby Swanson guy where he's like a much better real life guy than fantasy guy, but I definitely think his overall skill set won't translate well, especially in this day and age when 25 home runs isn't as special as it was maybe 5 years ago.
I kind of think a reasonable expectation for this year, he could be similar to like a Starlin Castro for this year. Is that?
Yeah. What do you think? What do you think he'll finish with runs wise?
He's hitting the bottom half of the order right now, right?
Yeah. He's hitting ninth every night. He's hitting ninth,
and that's a problem. Like, I mean, and at some 65. Point he's probably going to hit second. But right now he's not, and that like really
they got
limits.
Stan hitting second. They like putting the power guy up there.
Well, I just mean like some point in the future.
Oh right, yeah, sure.
You know, wouldn't you rather have Gleyber hitting second, Stan hitting third, or Judge hitting third? You know, Stan hitting fourth, something like that. But right now,
but
that's
then where
not
do you
happening.
Move Didi?
Fifth Nowhere. Or sixth.
That's tough.
Didi could even lead off with how he's hitting the ball now. So,
well, I mean, he's not hitting the ball
not
right
recently.
In the, yeah, not yeah. right at the second because right. he's like an 0-for-25 slump or something like that.
Yeah.
Which, like, don't get me wrong, like, you know, I kind of bought in and I'm still a little bit bought in on Didi. But, like, this is, like, why, like, fantasy analysis in the first month of the season is often, like just trying to keep your emotions in check because, like, we've been waiting for real baseball to start, and like how many people were chanting DD for MVP in April, and now we're like, well, he hasn't hit the ball in 2 weeks, and we're you know,
it's the same guys who are booing Stanton in the first like two home games.
Yeah, exactly. Like the people forget that you know, especially fantasy baseball is not fantasy football; it is a marathon, not a sprint.
Yes. Nobody overhypes Yankee players, though. I mean, that's not a true thing.
No, just be happy none of you guys live in New York City.
I live in Chicago, so I'll trade you.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, there you go.
Did you have anything else on Gleyber, Alex?
No, I'm all set.
Okay, cool.
I try to not talk about Yankees as much as possible.
Yeah, as Matt mentioned, I pretty much echoed a lot of what Mike and Matt said already when I talked about him about 2 weeks ago when he first got called up on the sleeper on the bust. I don't believe he's got a standout tool for fantasy right now. I think he is going to be a better fantasy player and a really nice real life player at some point, but the time for me really isn't now. So like if you went out and spent a bunch of fab, like now's the time to go trade him. Like his stock is not going to be any higher, I think, rest of the way than it is right now. So go ahead and try to move him in your redraft leagues, and keeper leagues, you hold on to him because you paid a pretty penny unless you're going to go out and get like a top five prospect for him. Like, you know, I mean, Matt, would you trade Gleyber Torres for Eloy Jimenez right now?
I would much rather have Eloy.
Yeah, yes. So I mean, if you're going to go get someone about that ilk, then sure, but you know, other than that,
I saw him in spring training this year, and he was so much fun to watch.
Eloy is
so fun to watch.
He's going to take this world, this game by storm when he comes up.
When do you think he comes up? Because I had someone ask me in a 2-year keeper league.
A year from now?
Okay, so, and that's pretty much what I said.
No reason for the White Sox to do anything about that. No reason.
Yeah. He's probably a guy we're probably talking about like a Super 2 next year, right? Probably someone who comes up in like May.
If he comes up in September, which is a slight chance, he'll come up in June. So I'd rather have him just come up in May next year.
Interesting. You know?
All right.
Because that's the Willie Calhoun thing right now. He's getting held down because he played in September last year.
I thought September didn't count towards the service time, though.
It does for Super 2, potentially. So you've got to pay the guy.
The rules are so stupid.
They're so dumb. And Calhoun should be up in like a week. Book it. Because then they get the extra year of arbitration. It's modern day slavery.
Interesting.
All right. Let's move on to Julio Teheran, who was having a really, really nice season. Of course, he gets bombed a little bit tonight through six innings, gave up two home runs, which resulted in four total earned runs, only struck out one. But coming into the night, he had a 3.14 ERA, almost a strikeout an inning. Alex, what are your thoughts on Julio Teheran?
Oh, yeah, man, I'm so excited to talk about him. Sell him as fast as you can. I've never been a big Julio Teheran fan to begin with. First of all, those home run pitches today were awful pitches. They were just absolutely awful pitches. I mean, Alberto Mora Jr. crushed that pitch today. I think we're finally seeing his 4.28 Sierra and his 4.33 FIP like express itself for sure. I think as of this morning, I don't know what it is now, but he had a 3.77 walk per nine. I think it's going to burn him. He's got an 85% left on base rate right now. The biggest thing for me is his last three games on the road, right? And his home and road splits, he has a 4.9 ERA at home and a 2.89 ERA on the road. I know he had one very nice start against the Mets when they were beginning their like offensive slump, as they always do around sometime this year. But I can't stress enough that in my opinion, as much as that stadium was built for Freddie Freeman, it was not built for Julio Teheran.
That short porch kills him.
Oh, absolutely. And his next starts are Miami at home, okay, which I think he'll probably have a good game and you sell him right after that. Then he's got Boston on the road, which I want no part of. Then he's got the Mets at home, Washington at home, and then at LA. So he doesn't have like the most difficult schedule in the world. But yeah, I mean, in terms of WOBA, he's yet to see a top 10 team offensively. So I don't know. I just personally, I'm not a big fan. I think now is the peak time to sell Julio Teheran.
Mike, are you selling Julio Teheran?
I mean, he's seen everybody in his division plus Tampa Bay. So yeah, that makes sense. I don't know. I think that Teheran's going to end up finishing a little bit worse than what he did in 2016, which for reference is a 3.21 ERA, 1.05 WHIP. His metrics right now are close to mimicking. I mean, they're improved over that thus far, but you know, his BABIP's going to go up, which means that, you know, his strand rate's going to go down, and that's going to end up, you know, inflating his ERA a bit. But like from here forward, maybe like a 3.7-ish ERA, I think that's what we can expect out of him probably, with a little bit heightened WHIP, and also accounting for the fact that, you know, SunTrust wasn't there in 2016. So, you know, inflate his ERA a little bit for that as well. But like the home run issues against lefties isn't going to go away. Like he's given up a 700 plus OPS to lefties each of the last couple of years here. So I expect that to, you know, remain as well. But his slider movement and slider swinging strike rate has kind of resurfaced this year, where it was really down in 2017. So I, you know, the fact that he has that as a weapon again is going to definitely help him out in the long run. And again, he's seen a lot of his in-division opponents a ton. I mean, a lot of these guys have seen him already. He's been fairly successful. So I think that we're going to see, again, a little bit worse 2016, you know, here forward, which, you know, I don't have the reference in terms of where he was starting pitch ranks wise, but I bet he was somewhere in the vicinity of like a top, you know, 50-ish guy, and that's probably what we can expect from here forward. So I don't hate Tehran. I don't think that he's going to end up being great, but I do think, you know, he is a safe innings guy for the most part, and somebody that's going to, you know, we can at least rely on to go out there. You know, if he puts up close to a 4 ERA and it's pretty serviceable, like over the course of 180, 190 innings, like, sign me up.
Yeah, a guy who has walk issues is sporting a – oh, God, I just had the stat. He is sporting a 28.6% infield fly ball rate with men on base.
Nice. Yeah.
That is going to regress a little
It's going to regress a lot.
So he's gotten pretty lucky, I think, in terms of kind of stranding runners, you know, and it may not necessarily, it shows a little bit in his left on base percentage, which is currently like a career high at 84.5% right now. But I think that could absolutely crater. And then you're seeing a guy who has a severe, severe home run problems at home. You know, like Alex mentioned, that is not, you know, also has trouble keeping, stopping from giving away the free pass. This is going to get ugly, I think, pretty quick. I think he's a usable guy on the road, but, like, how many leagues can you afford to only start a guy on the road? And then you've also got to worry about other parks that aren't great in the National League, you know? If he's on the road in Colorado, you're not starting him. If he's on the road in Cincinnati, you're probably not starting him. If he's on the road in Milwaukee, you may not be starting him. So, like, this becomes a guy that may only be usable, you know, a third of the time instead of half the time. So I think, yeah, if you didn't sell already, it may become a little bit harder after today's outing, but I would definitely try to sell maybe after that Miami start. Matt, what are your thoughts?
I gave up trying to predict what Julio is going to do to beat Tehranis with you.
Oh my God. I'm done. I'm getting off the show. I'm done. I'll see you.
No, later. But he's the kind of guy, you know, you think he's going to do good at home and he gets bombed at home. You think he's going to struggle on the road. It's vice versa. You think against the Cubs, you know, he's going to get, there's no way he's going six innings, but he does. And you think there's no way, you know, everything you think he's going to do, he does the opposite. He's an incredibly frustrating player to own in a dynasty league because I have him in a dynasty league, and it's hard to put a fair value on him just because he's league average, in my opinion. It's just the way he goes about it is not typical way that guys with his profile do. Gives up a lot of home runs, and he's in a bad park for, you know, bad home park, and lefties kill him, and it's a good park for lefties, and it's that stuff doesn't really add up, and He's kind of an enigma in a terrible way, and
he really needed the Braves to be bad this year so he could get moved.
Yeah,
and like this, like I don't know how many situations in which a team being good is really bad for one of their pitchers, but this is one of those situations where the team being good is killing his chance at being fantasy relevant.
Agreed.
All right, let's we're gonna wrap up we're going to cut a couple guys off this list because we're running a little bit long tonight, and I haven't slept, so I want to go to bed at some point. So we're going to finish out with these last two guys. We'll start with Paul Goldschmidt, who was a first-round pick. He was a very controversial first-round pick because of the humidor discussions that were being, you know, talked about coming into the year. The humidor has limited some of the run scoring in Chase Field and potentially has hurt Paul Goldschmidt a lot. Mike, what are you doing if you own Paul Goldschmidt right now?
You have to hold, because if you're going to sell him, then you're selling him at like the worst possible cost ever. But I mean, his weighted on base is 267 at home and 387 on the road. It's hard for me not to. I mean, but his contact is bad too. So like, you know, there's something definitely wrong. He's making the worst hard contact of his career right now, and that's also supported by StatCast metrics as well. His hard hit rate is 36% there, and you know, last year, in reference, it was 47%, 42% the year before. His exit velocity is 3 miles per hour down. Like, that's terrible. But his barrels are up, which means, you know, he's still making some hard contact, just not all the time, obviously. You just have to ride this out. I don't know what other advice to give other than that. It has to get better than this, but I'm starting to think more and more that the humidor is affecting things for him, at least at home. You know, a perennial pretty good hitter's park has now all of a sudden turned into more of a pitcher-favorable place, and I just – maybe that's something that's playing a part here, but the contact is the thing that's most glaring to me. That has to get better at some point. He's always been somebody that's sat in between, you know, 25, 24, 26% strikeout rate, and right now he's rocking a 37% strikeout rate. Still walking, which is great, and that's, again, a sign of a power hitter. So I do think the power turns around, but it might be more of a 2016 power year, you know, where he hit 24 home runs. We might end up seeing somewhere in the vicinity of that as opposed to the 36 that he hit in 2017. But, you know, batting average, I think, will end up improving. Obviously, there's no way it stays at 210 all year. I think he ends up staying in, you know, maybe the 270, 280 region. Like, that's the lowest I can see him sitting at. But as a whole, I'm a little worried about the home thing more than anything else, just in the contact, because that stuff that, you know, he's going to be playing at home all the time. And also contact wise, like, he's going to be there either is something wrong or his approach is different. I don't know. I don't know if he's trying to adjust because of the home ballpark and because of that stuff, or because of the ball itself. But it's starting to really kind of worry me there. But other than that, I think that it has to improve. You have to just kind of stay the course, and it has to improve.
Alex, what are your thoughts on Paul Goldschmidt?
Yeah, I mean, I agree 100%. You have to hold. There's really no other choice right now. I think I talk a lot about with other people in the community about how, you know, we can make as many stats as we want, and I'm all, you know, we study these stats and they're great, and I love the new stats. But there's one thing we'll never equate, and that's the mental part of baseball, right? And I just look at him and I see a guy who is pressing really, really hard right now. I mean, I like, the only stat that I can back that up with is his first pitch strike rate is up 11% from last year. So that could be two things. One, he's getting really anxious and he's swinging more at the first pitch. Or two, pitchers are thinking, okay, we know he is more than he's ever struggled in his career right now. So let's see if we can attack the zone a little bit more. All right. Last year, 45% of the time, Goldschmidt saw an 0-1 count. And this year, it's up to 54%. All right. So that's just, like I said, that's really the only stat that I could say. It's tough to, you know, I can't get into these guys' minds. I don't know what they're thinking. I don't profess to know what they're thinking. It could definitely be the humidor. It's definitely helping out their bullpen. They have the lowest home run per nine and home run to fly ball rate in baseball right now, which is, I never thought I would say that about the Diamondbacks bullpen in, you know, what we call Coors Light. So I just happen to think that, yeah, he's pressing and he'll get over it. He's too good of a hitter. It's not like Matt Carpenter where all of a sudden they're shifting him like crazy and he has to adjust. It's just, it looks like he's pressing.
Yeah. And I think to that point, like when he falls behind 0-1, he's striking out about 39% of the time right now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, you know, if he wasn't wearing batting gloves, I think you'd see the white of his knuckles.
I agree. Yeah.
And so for me, it's, yeah, like Mike said, like, you just have to hold and believe in the talent. The talent is still there. The premium eye is still there. I have to believe he's going to turn it around, and that, you know, at some point he's a good enough hitter. He's going to work his way out of it. Matt, what are your thoughts?
I agree with you guys. You can't sell him because you'd be giving up your first round pick at a massive discount. Maybe a second round pick if you got a league that they believed in the humidor hype. But, I mean, I saw a tweet today from, as the game's going on right now, Arizona beat writer Nick Picaro made a comment. Obviously, the Diamondback fans are frustrated with it because he doesn't have any hits today, Goldschmidt, but he's hit the ball hard three times. And
no, he's got a hit.
Taking, does he now?
Okay, he just got one.
So he's 1-for-4 now. Earlier, he was 0-for-3, and he was talking about how, you know, he's hitting the ball hard, and a lot of fans on there were saying they haven't even seen him been doing that lately. So it's maybe he's about to break out, and hopefully that's the case. Goldschmidt's one of the best players in the game, and I think ultimately it'll remain that way. I think you're still getting a first baseman that, even with this downturn, I think can still hit 20, you know, 22, 25 home runs and steal, you know, 12, 15 bags, and still going to produce really nice value. It just might not be first round value. But he won't be the reason if he rebounds and puts up those numbers, that won't be the reason why you don't win your league. You know, it's a frustrating start, but it won't. I think there's more to come. He's going to rebound.
All right, let's finish out with Dylan Bundy, and the reason I want to finish out with him is Alex on the top of your Twitter timeline right now. You have a really awesome stat on Dylan Bundy, so go ahead and talk about it and talk about Dylan Bundy and his recent struggles.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks. The stat that I found is the amount of games in which he wants to make me jump off a roof is about 30 now. And it's climbing up even further. As an Orioles fan, it's brutal. No, the one thing that I looked into is Dylan Bundy in outings where his average fastball velocity is 92 or over. He's got a 2.84 ERA with a 1.07 whip and a 28% K rate. And when that velocity is around 90, he's got a 7.88 ERA, a 1.88 whip, and a 23% K rate. And that K rate should theoretically be even worse because there was one game where he just didn't record a single out and made history by giving up home runs.
I started him out daily that day.
Oh, great. I apologize on behalf of the city of Baltimore. If it makes you feel any better, he also burned me for, I think, like negative 48 points that day, maybe it was. So I feel your pain. But it seems like he's just like I talked with one of the three Twitter followers that I have about him, about like this is just what we saw last year also, where he's just inconsistent. Luckily, there was a longer stretch of him being good. I think we saw his ceiling maybe get a little bit higher, but we also saw his floor get a lot lower. But for me, yeah, it's just all about velocity with Bundy. We were actually talking, Nick and I, during a podcast during his, not this past start, but the one before it. And Nick said, what's his velocity? Because I said that he was getting beat up in the first inning. And I said, oh, it's around 90. And it's like, oh, well, there you go. But what I don't understand is why. How does it fluctuate so much? How is there so much inconsistency with his velocity? I don't understand.
Matt, any thoughts?
I just want to say that I streamed Dylan Bundy yesterday, being Sunday, against Mike's Rays, and I got 7 shutout innings, I believe. So eat shit, Mike. And and it was a ballsy call. He got dropped after the debacle he put up earlier in the week. And I kind of think it's a 12 team league, but I mean I consider it with the pitching depth, because it's skewed toward pitchers with the stat category. So I kind of consider it like a 15 team league as far as pitchers go. I think you still have to own him in all those formats, just regardless of the clunker he put up. Just because the skills are obviously there, you're looking at the caliber, the pedigree, and this seems to change week by week. But they're letting him throw his cutter now, right?
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. So, the organization is finally. It took one guy going away and winning a Cy Young before we were like, well, maybe we'll try the cutter.
Yeah, well, that cutter.
They let him do it all last year too, though.
Say it again?
Yeah, they did.
They let him throw it all last year as well. So,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah
really
they
didn't
did. Yeah,
change from it.
Yeah, yeah they did. But, I mean, you have to roster Bundy, in my opinion, just the strikeout upside. Yeah, he's in probably the worst division for a pitcher, and he's got Baltimore home, so he doesn't get to face his own offense, which is also a bummer. But there's too much talent to leave him on the wire. I know the numbers look ugly, and I know it's a flyball-oriented approach in the worst division for it, but I'm still a Dylan Bundy guy at heart, and I couldn't let him sit there on the waiver wire in that league. I had to grab him.
All right, Mike, what are your thoughts on Dylan Bundy?
Yeah, I just don't think he's that good. I don't think he ever has been, and I just don't. I don't understand the fascination with it. Like I understand adding the cutter and like okay, and that's great and everything, but it ended up being like really iffy results last year. I mean, the strikeout rate's okay, and the walk rate's okay. Just everything's okay with him, but I never feel confident whenever he's on the mound. I've watched him countless times at this point, and I've followed him throughout his whole trajectory throughout the minor leagues. I mean, there was a time where I was hoping that he would just be a bullpen piece, and now he's starting, the majority of games, for the Orioles. He's, I guess, their kind of quasi ace with Kevin Gausman or whatever, but I think that he is a 4.2 to 4.5 ERA guy that, you know, probably will sit on, you know, 8 to 9 strikeouts per nine. Right now, he's a little bit ahead of that. He will always have a home run problem because his command has never been that great. And his velocity will probably continue to fluctuate because I just don't really ever buy into the health. I've just never really thought that he is the I feel like he's the type of guy that's going to not say that there's the energy. And this comes off of no like actual evidence or proof. I mean, I just based on looking at him, he, you know, I mean, if you're worried about injuries throughout all the minor leagues, then maybe whenever you do get to the big leagues, you just don't ever want to lose that spot. So maybe he will like hide injuries or whatever. Like that's the only thing I can think of with the whole fluctuation in velocity. It could be his mechanics seem pretty sound, so I will give him that. I don't see why the velocity would be affected there, but overall, I just don't think he's that good. I understand Collette had like a massive you know, thing throughout the offseason saying that he was going to be great this year or whatever, but I don't see it with Bundy whenever I watch him. I just, you know, he's still young and then, you know, maybe there's still a place to go, but for right now, I just, for 2018, I think he's going to continue to be a headache for most people.
In my opinion, he is our most important trade asset, which isn't necessarily a popular opinion, but I personally want to nuke that team and sell everything, and that includes Dylan Bundy.
Will Angelo let that happen?
No.
Yeah.
Well, at this point, he's probably just run by a respirator as opposed to... no, I shouldn't be saying that. No, I don't think he'll ever let that happen. He obviously, every time you think there's a decision to be made that would be beneficial for the club, he tends to go in the opposite direction. So no, I don't think that would ever happen. But in fantasy worlds, when I'm trying to, you know, put myself to sleep and think about what I would do if I was the Orioles GM, then that I just think that's the right thing to do. I mean, we could rebuild our farm system with him and selling Machado and Scope. And anyway, I don't want to go too long of a Orioles rant. Sorry.
Listen to this batting triple slash: 326, 402, 505. Now, I'm sure people are wondering, well, why are you talking about a batting triple slash when we're talking about Dylan Bundy? Because that's what Dylan Bundy is giving up versus left-handed pitching.
Nice.
Or left-handed hitting, sorry.
I know you, man.
Yeah.
So, like, that has always been the problem with Dylan Bundy.
You would think his cutter would neutralize that, too.
You would think, but it hasn't. Right. You know, and, I mean, his strikeout rate is about 11%, over 11% lower versus left-handed pitching. He walks two batters per nine more against left-handed hitting. He just really struggles versus lefties, and until that's figured out, he's going to be one of these guys that has moments of brilliance and moments of utter and complete buffoonery. That makes him super difficult to own, especially in weaker leagues when you're not able to see what a lineup looks like before he's pitching. You know, in daily leagues, you can kind of check the lineup he's going up against. If it's really lefty heavy, then you go, well, maybe I need to sit this one out. But the velocity issues, you know, really awful splits, that's not a huge success or, you know, a chance that he's going to succeed. He really is the Julio Teheran of the American League.
Teheran's better. Teheran's better. He ends up with better results. I can tell you that right now.
I think Kevin Gausman's the Teheran of the American
League. What are you? You guys are like physically hurting me right now.
And Matt, you shut your mouth about Kevin Gausman. You already dug me once with the Bundy with the Rays thing. He did give up 7 runs to the Rays already this year. So like Bundy has no like thing to stand on for that.
I'm breaking my own rule. I banned him from the podcast because you two talk about him too much, and it's me doing that today. So I will shut up. Thank
you, Justin. I think did you ever read that Tom Tango book? I think it's just called like The Book or something.
No, I didn't.
It's this crazy book of numbers that I read for my thesis, and like he talks about like theoretically what you could do in the end of games is take your pitcher for a pitcher who has heavy platoon splits and put them in left field.
Oh, I've heard
this.
And
then switch back and forth between putting him in, and then you wouldn't have to burn a spot, right? Mm-hmm. You could just leave him in left field, bring him in for righties, and then switch him back and forth. Do it for Bundy. The Orioles have nothing to lose.
Well, they're throwing the likes of Joey Ricard and stuff out there. I mean, they just picked up Renato Nunez.
Let's get Ricarded, baby. Let's get Ricarded.
just put Zach Britton out in left field once once he's healthy.
Well, cartoon. Richard Blyer and Dylan Bundy. That'd be great. I'd love to see that.
What's the awesome combined walk rate of everyone in that lineup? Like 2.5%?
Probably. That's probably about like, infinity.
Like Trumbo, Adam Jones, Tim Beckham. None of those guys.
But that's the best part about Baltimore. When the entire industry zigs, we zag. We say, you know what? We don't really want OBP. We're going to go with every Mark Reynolds comp.
They're 23rd in, or tied for 22nd in baseball in walk rate right now. There are teams tied below
22nd. Machado's putting that on the bag.
The farewell tour, my favorite. The
tied with the Giants.
Machado will be wearing Dodger blue in what, 2 months?
Yeah, maybe.
Ugh.
God, that's going to hurt me. Hopefully the Dodgers are out of it by then. But all right, that's going to wrap it up for this episode. Alex, thank you for joining us.
You guys, thanks so much for having me. It's truly been an honor to be talking with you. I appreciate it very much.
Definitely going to have you back again. Why don't you remind people where you can reach on social media and then plug all your work?
Yeah, you can find me at AlexFast8 and check out that MLB debuts article at pitcherlist.com.
Nice. Mike, where can you be reached? What are you working on?
You can reach me at Mike Werner, FWFB on Twitter. I do the daily matchups column for Baseball HQ on Mondays this year. And I also write a couple things for Fangraphs. I write the Roto write-up with you, Justin. I had to do a bunch of those last week since you were on vacation. And
I appreciate that.
So, no problem. And I also do the bullpen report 1 day a week on Sundays for them as well. Really good piece, actually. I didn't really regularly read the bullpen report prior to this season, and just putting it together and reading everybody else, insanely good piece for people that want to get ahead of their leagues in terms of bullpen usage and finding the next closers and the next Lima targets and stuff. It really insanely valuable piece, I would say. So check that out.
All right, Matt, where can you reach? What are you working on?
MB Temp FWFB, updating my prospect list every day, pretty much. It's a running document in my Excel file here. I'll post the newest update on the site here in a few days when I get time. And small nugget here, DJ LeMahieu looks like he might need thumb surgery, so it could be
God
Ryan McMahon time.
Jeez,
is it Ryan McMahon time or Brendan Rodgers time?
Are they willing to play McMahon at second?
Yeah, is he going to play second for them? Or we got to re-sign him, Daniel Descalso.
McMahon's been playing second base since he got demoted to AAA. So.
Shut up. No, he
hasn't. Yes, he
is. Wow. How tall is he?
Also,
6'2", probably. He was a quarterback and a really highly regarded quarterback in high school, so he's got to have some height to him.
He is. You see that 6'2", Beltre 185.
Is going? Yep. You see Beltre's going back in the DL also?
God damn it.
You didn't know this? Justin, have you not read the news? What's going on?
He's
going
to miss a month.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Hey, Matt, what do you update more, your actual prospect list or your roster on MLB The Show?
That's a good question. My actual prospect list, though, for sure.
By the way, my pitching staff is absolutely crushing it tonight in Towers. This is...
Gotta end on that, right?
You can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. Email me or the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. You can read all my work at Fangraphs and Fantasy Alarm and Friends of Fantasy Benefits. You can hear me on The Sleeper and the Bus, on all the Friends of Fantasy Benefits podcasts, and on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network on Sundays for the Tout Wars Hour, 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern, 11 to 1 Pacific. Check out all the stuff I'm doing with the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational. Got a podcast for that as well. Mike was complaining because he had to pick up some of my work. This is my life, Mike. Welcome to my life.
I don't know how you do it. If anybody was questioning your work ethic, which nobody does, everybody that you talk to in the fantasy industry is just like, oh my gosh, you're amazing. Look at all the work you do. I mean, I'm not going to give you that type of glory, but no, it is a lot. I'll give you that.
No, I do it at the cost of my relationship and the lives of my children. But that is going to wrap us up. For Mike, Matt, Alex, and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season. Every night I get you on the telephone. We sleep and we talk and we play till